Hello and welcome to the Bingeables Podcast, a podcast for geeky TV junkies where we watch TV shows you just have to binge on. We're your hosts, Chinlin.
And Isaac.
And Ryan.
Welcome back, Ryan, to the Bingeables Podcast. And welcome back, listeners. This is officially the final episode of 2020. And we hope everyone's been being safe this holiday season. Christmas just passed. We're recording this just before the new year. So we hope everyone's being safe and is having as good a time as possible. And guess what? This is our 91st episode. We are so close to 100.
Woohoo!
Oh my god! We're close to 100!
Yeah, I know. You were emoting for the microphone, and I thought that was strange. Like, people can't see that.
Yes, but they can hear me go, ah!
They can hear a smile. They can hear enthusiasm, and I found it to be quite climactic. Unlike Isaac, who found 91 to be anticlimactic, and so maybe he's waiting on 100. At 100, he'll cheer and celebrate. So maybe 91 is just like 91. At 100, he'll emote more.
I think for those who know me, they'll go, no, I think Isaac will just go yay. when we hit 100.
But anyways, welcome back, Ryan. And of course, our regular listeners know who you are. But for anyone who's new to the podcast, would you like to introduce yourself really quick?
Sure. My name's Ryan. I have been on Bingeables. This is it's 3 or 4. I think this might actually be the... This is the 4th episode, because we had Quintessential 90s, Don't Trust the Bee at Apartment 23, Stand Against Evil, and now Fave Shows to Binge of 2020. So we are actually at 4 episodes. And so I'm really excited to be back here and to talk about some fun shows to binge. And it's a pleasure to get to end my year, again returning to the show and getting to sit down with you guys, because I always have such a fun time, and I really appreciate you reaching out to me, even though I don't tweet a lot about television shows, but I do certainly watch them, and it takes me a little while to get into them a little bit, but once I find some shows, I enjoy talking about them.
Alrighty. Awesome. Let's get started. So on Tuesday, December 22nd, I tweeted on the Bingeables podcast Twitter account our question that we will dive into for today's episode. What are some of your favorite new shows of 2020? This is kind of a repeat of the same thing we did last year in 2019 of, new shows in 2019 that people liked. I don't know if it was the Twitter algorithm that kind of screwed things over, but like, we just didn't get a lot of responses. Maybe more people watched older shows this year, or just watched new seasons of other shows that came out last year or previous years. So we didn't get a whole lot of responses, but that's okay, because I think between the three of us, we have a good amount to talk about.
There was no Chernobyl this year, so, there's that.
That Chernobyl is so good, but it's also so depressing. I cannot rewatch that.
Or maybe, Chinlin, maybe everybody was so busy listening to my new show, which debuted in August, Four's a Crowd, and so that's why they weren't watching as many TV shows, because they were getting their TV fix in audio form on my brilliant, that's right, listeners, shameless plug here, brilliant audio sitcom, Four's a Crowd. And that could also be why. They're just so busy finding out all the crazy antics that are going on in Apartment 9. So,
yep.
Yeah.
Ryan, as our honorary guest, we will let you take the reins.
Sure. I want to start off with Star Trek, but wasn't sure which one to start with, and so I'll save both good, but I'll save the, in my opinion, the better one for last. So we'll start with Star Trek Lower Decks, which I was really excited to start. And listeners, I got turned on to Star Trek Lower Decks by listening to the Bingeables episode on Star Trek Lower Decks. Always be listening up for shows that you may have heard of. I mean, most of us hear of shows, but so often we don't take the time to watch them or listen to them. And so I loved everything I heard about it, except I do have a little bone to pick with you, Chinlin, because I'm going to be Team Isaac on that. TNG definitely has a much better opening theme than Lower Decks. Even though Lower Decks is good, and it starts off with the exact same, I guess, string instruments or hum or tone, whatever it is at the very beginning, and it's the same tone as the opening little monologue in the TNG theme. But gotta say, TNG still has the best Star Trek TV show opening theme. I love the fanfare. Jerry Goldsmith is brilliant, who also did Lower Decks, if I remember correctly. So Jerry, I love how we get to experience Jerry Goldsmith. And listeners, interesting, Jerry Goldsmith was also the composer for the catchy Gremlins Rag theme from Gremlins. And so Jerry Goldsmith
Oh.
has certainly been bringing just incredibly memorable themes and scores to our years on television or in the movies. But I do remember that from the episode, is that Chinlin is Team Lower Decks and Isaac was Team TNG. And so I'm listening. And in terms of the show, everything you guys said was true. And I don't want to retread a lot of what you talked about in the episode because that would take away from the just the it would take away from going and listening to the episode. So listeners, I'm not going to go into a lot of details because you should listen to the Lower Decks episode. Everything you said is true. It very much fits within the Star Trek universe that we're familiar with from TV, and we do get a little bit of the movies in there as well. I'm not quite sure when the show takes place. It's certainly TNG Voyager timeframe, and it sounds like it's post Voyager return to Earth.
Yeah, it's gotta be.
I
I
bet it
thought
was
it was
never.
like a decade or so into the future.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's post Voyager. How far post Voyager, I'm not sure, but
Because
I'm pretty sure it's post Voyager.
Riker's now another a captain on his own ship.
Okay, so probably several years into the future, but it's totally grounded in the show, but feels connected. It's a new show that feels connected. I love the references, and even if you're unfamiliar with TNG and Voyager, you can still enjoy the show, but you will get much, your degree of enjoyment is much higher if you're familiar with those two series. And it's Star Trek. It even has the exploration of what it means to be human, maybe not in as quite a philosophical sense as TNG and Voyager, but it's still there. And I like the animation. It's fun. And the characters are, there's somebody for all of us to connect with. That, and you get to see Broimler naked, sort of.
Boimler, he's such a Boy Scout.
Yeah.
I'm
To totally my type, though.
I'm gonna disagree with you a little bit, because I know what your other pick for Star Trek. I mean, there were only two new Star Trek shows that I'm aware of, but like I actually feel like I like Lower Decks better than Picard. Not that I hate Picard or anything, just
okay.
I feel like if new seasons of both released simultaneously, I think I would watch Lower Decks first. But that's
Okay.
probably because it's a more feel-good show. Like, or it's sort of less depressing, I guess. Yeah, I mean, yeah, so that's just my 2 cents on that. What else? What other shows did you see?
Oh, okay. So just going through them. Next up on my list is Hollywood from Brian Murphy, which came out midway through the year. I think it came out in the spring or summer. And for film lovers, I mean, Hollywood is just steeped in just real film history and follows aspiring stars at a time in which the studio system was still very powerful, although we are encroaching upon the end of Hollywood's golden age. And it features incredibly diverse cast of characters. It's not afraid to talk about sexuality in its various forms, and how individuals had to play by Hollywood studio system rules in order to play the game, or so we thought. In the series, there's certainly a lot of twists, especially towards the end, which by all accounts should have ended in failure. But of course, this is Hollywood. This is the movies, and so it ends in triumph. One of my critiques in it is that the last episode of Hollywood just kind of undoes a lot of what the preceding 9 episodes led up to. And I feel that the ending was a bit of a letdown, because we talk about being relatable through the entire series. Like, how do we relate to people? These are real people. Not everybody is, white, cis, male or female, and white, straight, cis, male or female, out there. And so we have, different people. And the series, championed the idea of having a black female lead in the film, which is great. Probably really wouldn't have happened in real life, but this is, Ryan Murphy's reimagination of the Hollywood that never was, and perhaps never will be, but where Hollywood is certainly the setting. And so we make headway with that. We have gay characters, that aren't parodied or satired, and so we're bringing a fair light to all these characters, and because it's like these are the real people that exist out there, and they deserve to have fair representation in media. But then at the very end of the series, everybody gets it's a Hollywood ending. Everybody gets what they want. Even the actor that did not get his Oscar still got the girl, so he still won. And I found that was incredibly unrelatable. So the whole series is built upon, this idea of relatability, and then I can't relate to that, because that's not reality at all. Not everybody wins. Most people don't win. And so here we have this triumphant story in which everybody that works on this film got their Oscar, or they got the girl. And so I have to say that the series left me very disappointed, even though I liked so much about it going into it, especially all the film history, because I know all these references and these places. And then it's just, yeah, it was missing the ability to connect. And so, and the movie even addresses that. They make changes in the film within the film in order to make it more relatable, like to be able to connect with these characters. But then the series as a whole leaves me feeling disconnected. So it's quite the ironic ending in the series. But that's Ryan Murphy's Hollywood. So you see a lot of American Horror Story returning actors and color palette and camera work. I mean, it's totally fits in with the Murphyverse. Next, we have Shudder's Cursed Films, which is a
Wait. Hang on. Before you move on, I was like, I feel like I wanted to see this show.
It's on Netflix, right?
It is on Netflix.
Okay, yeah, because I was like, I think I saw a preview for this show, and I was like, oh, that looks like something I might want to watch. And I definitely, now that you've mentioned, it's a It's a show about making a movie. I love plays about making plays and movies about making movies, especially when they use the fake play as a way to foreshadow what's going to happen in the real play. Well, now I'm not sure. I think I'll still probably try and watch it.
It's on your queue, but you're not in a rush to watch it now.
if you love self-reflexive films, backstage musicals, so on and so forth, there's a lot to enjoy in it, especially, you know, the film history part. I just feel that it undid a lot of what it set up at the very end. And so it's hard.
I had a problem like that with Downton Abbey. I don't know if you ever watched that show, mm-hmm. but I feel like every time they had characters making progress, like having, you know, more sensible thoughts about things, they had to kill off the character, because if that character existed back in the 19-teens or early 1920s, like, things would have been a lot different for them. So they have to go, well, that person's too progressive. You're dead now.
Yeah. So
I can understand the sentiment of, well, like, you were setting up all these characters to, you know, be a certain way, and then you just went, nah, never mind.
Yeah.
I had a question about Hollywood, actually.
Sure.
So this is by Ryan Murphy, and Ryan Murphy, American Horror Story is an anthology series. Mm-hmm. So Hollywood, the show, is it a limited series, or do we have any news of whether they're coming back for a season two? Maybe it's a new thing in season two, and maybe that'll be more to your liking.
Sure. Well, you know what? Let's take a look right now. Hollywood season two, because I don't think it's been greenlit yet. It's certainly set up to have a follow-up season.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, if you go ahead and reset all the characters or something, then it's really like, okay, well, that was one story, and then we can kind of start over again with a new story if we reset everyone.
Oh, and IMDb says it's a mini series.
You know, there's nothing officially. It does not appear that a second season has been. Hints renewal. Okay, so the most we have is hinting at a renewal. We don't have any definitive greenlit season two. I would be okay if it did not turn into an anthology series. I know Ryan Murphy loves his anthology series, and of course, the American Horror Story, except for a couple of seasons that I thought were just okay. You know, consistently a good show, and I think you could make Hollywood into an anthology series, but it, you know, I don't know how, because we covered so much in season one. It's like, you know, what area do we want to, you know, kind of, you know, explore next? Because we covered a lot, and you don't want to retread what you've already been over. So I don't know the direction that it could go, except for the same kind of thing. But I wouldn't want to watch the same kind of thing. You know, we could maybe pick a different decade. So perhaps that's what it's going to do. It's going to cover maybe some similar topics, have some similar social commentary, but maybe instead of being set in the 1940s, you know, maybe it'll be set in the 1960s or 70s. So that could be interesting, taking a look at the industry through the lens of different decades. But you know, I mean, I would watch season two. I mean, I may have been a little disappointed by the season finale of this season one, but not enough to make me uninterested in a season two. I would certainly still like to watch it. You know, just if for nothing else, just the film history. I mean, it's film geeks. You know, I think you know, are the target audience for it, and mm-hmm. it works.
Alrighty, would you like to move on to your next pick?
Sure. Next pick is Cursed Films, which is a docu-series on Shudder. And this series is great. It explores five different films that all have these urban legends and alleged curses that are, that have become such a part of our zeitgeist, out of the production of these films. And we take a look at films such as The Exorcist, The Omen, Poltergeist, The Crow, and Twilight Zone, the movie. And most of the curses that are talked about, or alleged curses that are talked about, are ones in which most people are familiar. Like, we've all heard, that Poltergeist is cursed, or The Omen is cursed. And what the docuseries does is it dives deep into, really exploring whether or not, the idea of a curse is real, or is it an element of a social psychosis, or maybe a little bit of both. And the one that I found the most interesting was definitely Poltergeist. It had the most going on. Same thing with The Exorcist. I learned new stories as well, such as Poltergeist answers the old age question of those real skeletons. And for those of you that can't see me, air quotes around our real skeletons with the in Poltergeist. And we talk about the decapitation in The Omen, the infamous helicopter disaster in Twilight Zone, the movie, and of course the untimely and tragic death Brandon Lee and The Crow, as well as the various curses out of The Exorcist. And to go through each and every one of the curses would just take up, too much time. But you learn the real story behind Brandon Lee's tragic death. And when you have tragedies like this, I mean, it's, there is a, especially as history goes on, there is the social psychosis, because you want to make sense out of that which you can't make sense, or that you want to apply sense to chaos, or sense to the, or connect all these random acts, because in our minds, everything has to be connected in some form or fashion. And that's what we have here. Like, for example, in Poltergeist, we have two deaths that are associated with Poltergeist over the run of the series. And one, is Heather O'Rourke, who, tragic, who died very young. I believe she was 12 years old. And
oh my God.
Yeah. One of the points that the individuals made in the interviews on Poltergeist was that to blame Heather O'Rourke's death and the other tragedies that befell the cast on these real skeletons is really disrespectful to the real death of these individuals, because it has, has nothing to do with these skeletons. It is, it's unfortunate, but it's not associated with the curse. We want it to be, because we hate the idea of, just death, especially when it's young and tragic. And so we want to make sense of it. And they talk about how by putting the blame on these skeletons, that it's really taking away from the legitimate tragedy that befell the friends and family of the actors. So they talk about that. And just on the topic of the skeletons, real skeletons are used all the time. It's way cheaper to get skeletons from science departments at universities or morgues than it is to make them. And so why would you spend thousands of dollars on making a skeleton when for maybe $100 or whatever, you can get a real one? So real skeletons are used all the time. So there was nothing unusual about using real skeletons on the set of Poltergeist. And there was a real decapitation in The Omen. It has nothing to do with the Antichrist, but there was there's tragic accidents associated with it. I'd say The Omen is the one where there's maybe a bit more creative liberties taken, because it is a bit more it's a bit more abstract because a lot of what was surrounded the Omen was like the ushering in of the Antichrist, since that's what it's about. And so there's just a bit more, I guess it's a bit more mystery around the Omen. So I think they take more creative liberties with it than they do with the rest of them. But like in The Exorcist, we have Linda Blair, who was typecasted, I mean, still to this day. And so she was never able to grow out of her role, her iconic, albeit her role as Reagan. And as an actress, she just, you know, we did not allow her to grow beyond that. And so whenever we needed, you know, a possessed person or mainly cameos. And so it was mainly, she didn't even get to be much of an actress as much as playing herself in a lot of shows. And it's not to take away from the enjoyment of these films. These films are still great, and they're some of the most influential, you know, over the decades. And there's many influential horror films, you know, this, you know, being five that have, you know, alleged curses attached to them. But it puts a lot of the history in a new perspective, and takes a lot of the mysticism away from these films, and that sometimes, you know, tragedy, you know, befalls people. And it just so happened that they were, you know, connected to these films in one way or another, or it's a crew not doing their jobs, which is the case of The Crow. And I'm not saying there's any one person to blame, but it's just it was a technical accident, an oversight, and there's malfunction, you know, equipment malfunctioning involved. But you know, it's, you know, we live in a, you know, these things do happen. But I love how we explore it and we don't turn it into some kind of, you know, colossal joke, or we don't, we're not making light of it. It's a serious approach. It's an entertaining series, but it is a serious approach to these, you know, alleged curses. And for horror fans especially, you know, you're really going to like cursed films. Even if you're, you know, familiar with the curses, and you probably are, but you get to look at them in a whole new light and, you know, maybe not be so quick to jump to a curse in the future and, you know, put some more critical thought into what went down. But it's highly educational. They're half-hour episodes, so they're very easy to binge, and, you know, highly recommend it.
Well, that's great. It sounds like a very exploratory, informational docuseries. I admit I haven't watched as much as I feel like I should, honestly. But yeah, there's plenty of good docuseries out there. So thanks for talking about the Cursed Films docuseries, Ryan. I know the next one on your list for favorite new shows this year is also the same as one of Isaac's on his list. So you guys can converse about that. Try to avoid spoilers for said host.
I mean, okay. I'm actually going to try and avoid spoilers for the most part anyway, because I feel like what we're really doing is trying to introduce people to shows that they may have missed this year that we watched. Now, a lot of them are really popular, so it's unlikely that they've missed them, but, you know, just in case. So, Ryan, we're talking about Star Trek Picard here, and it's been a while since I watched it, but what did you think this is the better of the two new Star Trek series? What did you like so much about this one?
I mean, just for starters, I mean, not to put too fine a point on it, but that we have the return of Sir Patrick Stewart as his iconic character of Picard. We get to see him in the classic Star Trek TNG uniform. It's either in the first or second episode. And, you know, I loved every minute of Star Trek Picard. And it's not just getting to see the definitive captain of the Enterprise. But we have other beloved characters that come back in the series, such as who's probably my favorite character from Voyager 7 of 9. And so we get her back, and that's not so much a spoiler, listener. It's like second or third episode. So
yeah, and I'm pretty sure she's in the trailers and stuff. Like
she was in the trailer. So we get them. We get you know Riker, Deanna Troi. We don't get lost in the nostalgia. You know, certainly we have many references to TNG. There's a lot of First Contact references as well. Picard seems very much birthed out of the events of First Contact. And, of course, then we have Nemesis in there as well. And this takes place many years after Nemesis, listeners. If you're wondering, like, where does this fit in the Star Trek universe? It's way later. It's like 30 years after Nemesis or 20. It's 20 or 30 years after the events of Nemesis.
Right. Like, it's reasonable to expect that Picard has aged as much as Patrick Stewart has, right? Like,
yes.
They've gone, okay, well, when was the last time he was on screen? All right, that many years later, that's when we are.
This show here, you know, it's got the warp core, if you will, of TNG, whilst delivering a fresh story, you know, perfect for 2020. And, you know, what separates Star Trek from Star Wars, and I love having this conversation, and I don't not like Star Wars. I'm just more of a Star Trek fan. But what separates Star Trek from Star Wars is there are two completely different approaches to, you know, to future fantasy, science fiction, you know, wherever you want to place these, and that, mm-hmm. you know, Star Trek is a character-driven exploration of humanity, which is at the core of every episode in the TV series, and you still have those ideas in the motion pictures as well. And Picard has more action than its TV series counterparts, but you don't lose that exploration of humanity. There's still the characters which serve as a conduit through which we can explore what it means to be human, whether that's organic or synth. You know, when Sir Patrick Stewart announced the series at, I think it was San Diego Comic-Con 3 years ago at this point, it was the crowd couldn't have cheered any louder. We were just so incredibly excited for him to come back. And we all know that Sir Patrick Stewart, it is more than Picard. I mean, he's a Shakespearean actor. He's been Scrooge, which his is my favorite version of A Christmas Carol. And he's Charles Xavier, and he was in Green Room, you know, horror adjacent films. And so we all know he's more than Picard, but we love him as Picard. And I want to say that over the years, or decades, really, that Patrick Stewart knows just how much that character meant to so many people. And I like how we've got a character journey with him, because the Picard we meet at the beginning of season one is not the Picard we remember from the TV series or the movies. But I love how come the season finale that we do get a glimpse at the Picard that we know and love from history. And his relationship with Starfleet can be characterized as our relationship with maybe our employer or our government or mm-hmm. other institutions in our lives. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of depth in the series there. And so there's like just everything about it I really, really enjoyed. And returning to that universe. And listeners, Bingeables has an entire episode on Star Trek Picard. So without getting into a lot of details, you definitely want to go back and listen to the I'm getting my shows confused. I was
we covered TNG and you covered TNG Lower Decks.
So it was Besotted Geek Pod, who's known for their Star Trek TOS series right now. They did a one-off on Picard. That's
okay.
So it's like, I know I talked about Picard with somebody, and so I'm sorry.
Yeah, it wasn't
so
us.
I
No, it's fine. But, it's fine. We did two Star Trek shows. It's okay. Haven't done Picard because I just hadn't watched it yet.
Oh, well, when you do, I love to sit down and just go an entire episode on Picard. But I'm curious, Isaac. I know you prefer Lower Decks to Picard, although obviously you enjoy both. What is it? What did Picard not do for you that maybe you were hoping it would?
It was honestly the ending. Okay. So for most of the show, it was a little predictable, but I was okay with that. I feel like they were, you know, intentionally doing things that were obvious to me, and I'm like, oh, that person is obviously going to betray them. Like, there were definitely some things that I was like, wait, why did these people show up? Where did her gun go? Oh, she's gonna betray them. They're just gonna. I see. And I think it was subtle enough that all that was fine. But it was really the ending.
Okay.
Where they kind of hand waved some of the science fiction stuff, mm-hmm. Which is, you know, very typical of, say, Star Trek The Next Generation. But for most of this show, I felt that they had been, pretty good about not doing, like, super unrealistic things science-y wise. But in this case, for the last episode, I was like, I don't think this tracks. I don't feel like this all fits together like you guys want it to. Like, okay. There's definitely a hole here. But other than that, you know, I agree with you. For most of this whole season, I hope there's a season two.
There is. There's the season two. It's either been greenlit or in pre or principal production, but there definitely is a yes.
Okay. For most of this first season, like I felt like they were doing a great job of taking TNG and making it sort of a more realistic show, but that still dealt with the same themes.
Okay.
And I don't know if you've seen Star Trek Discovery.
I tried getting into Discovery, and I think you guys and I may have talked about Discovery, or Chinlin and I may have talked about Discovery. And I think when we were getting ready to record Stand Against Evil, I think we got on a tangent with Star Trek Discovery for one reason or another. But I know Chinlin's tried to get me to watch it, and I have seen a handful of episodes, and by handful, I think it's like three or four. And it was just... there was just something missing.
It's different. So it's not your episodic TNG thing. Yes. And so you're not going to get the nostalgia thing. For the first couple of seasons, it's set in the same time period as the original series. And so you're like, well, this is a new take. It's cool.
I remember your complaint about Discovery, not to go on too much of a tangent, but like, I remember your complaint about Star Trek Discovery was that it was set in the past, but the technology was obviously better.
Right. Yeah. And so that's what's interesting is they actually work on that through the show about like why you don't see holograms in the original series, but they had holograms in the in Discovery to start with. And they actually, like, if you think about it, you know, the ship itself, the Discovery, is a very sort of game-breaking technology that would have solved so many problems in the original series and in the Next Generation. They also, you know, sort of fixed that. Like, they eventually kind of work through all of that, and it actually ends up getting set like 900 years in the future, which is better, I think. But it was a slow burn to get there. But what I wanted to say was that I think Picard sort of does a better job of of this, you know, bringing more realism. But I think that Discovery isn't necessarily bad at it, but I do like Picard better for this. Yeah, my only real gripe with the show was
Picard.
With Picard was that ending. Otherwise, I enjoyed it a lot. I could have used more of the original characters, less Brent Spiner. Not that I hate Brent Spiner.
Yeah.
I absolutely love him, and I think he's the best part of the whole series. It's just that he's, for the same reason that they killed him at the end of whatever.
Whichever movie.
Yeah. It's that, you know, he's a actual human being, and he ages, and his character is not supposed to, and so it becomes ridiculous to try and make him do that.
His eyes are creepy. I remember thinking that, though, whatever contact lenses they were using in Picard, which maybe are the same ones, but we're watching, you know, 1080p or 2 or 4K versus 480p, so maybe that is actually how they looked on the set. But his eyes were definitely a bit creepy. The makeup was just like, okay, I know obviously nobody's really that pale. I'm cognizant that you have to use makeup, but I think you could get away with that pale makeup on a TV screen from 1990 bit easier than it is to get away with a TV screen in 2020.
Right.
And so there are those elements. I think what really did Picard for me, aside from Picard, because that's kind of a little too easy to talk about, but I think it's the introduction of Seven of Nine, like bringing her back, because that's who that's who turned Voyager around. You know, Voyager was okay. I mean, then she comes on, and then at Picard, she's introduced, and you get to, and then she makes more and more of a presence throughout Picard, and that, you know, bringing her on board as a, you know, what will probably be a regular cast member moving forward was just really made my day when I started, like, oh my gosh, Seven of Nine, she's just such a fascinating character then and still even now.
Well, awesome. I can't wait to watch Picard. Isaac won't let me until I've watched Deep Space Nine, but this is not the time for that. For some of my picks for new shows in 2020, there was a good amount when I was doing my research that I found, and three of my picks are pretty fairly recent, so a little recency biased here, but I did have one show that came out like January this year. So out of the four, I'm gonna start with my first one, Dash and Lily. It is a young adult holiday rom-com series on Netflix. It actually came out early November. It's about these two teenagers. Dash hates Christmas, Lily loves Christmas, and it's actually based on a young adult series that I haven't read yet, but like I know the authors are like really good young adult authors, so they're pretty experienced and, you know, good writers. So I liked the story a lot in the show. I'm excited to read the books. I tried to get Isaac just to watch it. Like, you know, for funsies, you don't have to hate what you might have hate watched it.
I did hate watch it. Oh, man, did I hate watch that show.
But I really liked it. It was only like 8 episodes, so it's a pretty quick binge if you're in the mood for a holiday rom-com series that isn't just another Hulu, The Christmas Prince or whatnot.
My biggest gripe, though, was just the age of the actors.
You thought Dash looked too old.
Yeah, well, I think they both look too old. I was like, I feel like these are 25-year-olds and they should, you know, be able to do whatever they want, because it's not established initially that they're high school kids. So I'm just going by what they look like. I'm like, these are 25-year-olds. What is their deal? What are they doing?
Is it like Riverdale? Well, that's one thing I pick out in the CW. All those CW shows, and I love me some Vampire Diaries and and the originals. I really like those shows, but it's like, come
there's no
on.
CW vibes at all with Dash and Lily. Like, I've watched plenty of CW shows. It's not like that at all,
okay.
Which I like.
Okay.
Because I need a, you know, I haven't watched CW shows in a while. Mm-hmm. But Dash and Lily is very cute, and I like it. And the way they meet is very unique. It's a different kind of cute meet.
Okay.
Lily comes up with this idea to, technically it was someone else's idea. I won't spoil that part. But she has a red notebook and she calls it the Book of Dares. She puts it in a bookstore. Actually, this bookstore is real in New York City. It's called the Strand Bookstore.
Oh, cool.
It's been there for decades. Side tangent. She puts it in a bookshelf at the Strand bookstore, and then Dash, it's also his favorite bookstore, he finds it. He thinks one of the employees misplaced it, and then he actually starts reading, and he's intrigued because Lily has set up like these little scavenger hunts in the book, and she's like, hey, if you have to use your phone, don't even bother playing. So she's got that sassy humor, sassy personality that just comes through the Dash. He picks it up immediately and he's like, oh, you're on. So, and this is all just in the pilot, so I'm not really spoiling anything for listeners who may have seen the thumbnail but wasn't sure if they want to watch it. I liked it. I'm doing a rewatch. But yeah, I think it's a good new show for 2020, and it didn't get a lot of recognition, so I think it deserved more recognition. And then next on my list is Alice in Borderland. This is a Japanese sci-fi series, and it's got a little bit of horror, but it's not straight out horror. There is a scary element to it. It's about, this like just came out a few weeks ago and I binged it in like 2 days or 2.5 days. It's about these three guys who are all gamers, and like they're being stupid boys and like getting in trouble with the police and stuff. So they hide in a restroom of a subway station to get away from the police. And then once they get into a stall, and like the lights kind of go out for like a second, and then everything is just silent. And they come out of the stall and realize all of Tokyo, everyone in Tokyo has disappeared. And later that night, there are these like signs that say, hey, there's a game arena, walk this way, and they meet up with other people. So there are other people who are still around, but the like 99% of Tokyo has disappeared. And basically the game masters have set up these sadistic games to get people who are still in Tokyo to compete with one another. And if you win, you stay alive. If you lose, you're dead.
So it sounds like Saw meets Hunger Games in Tokyo.
Meets Black Mirror, I might add, because this seems very similar to the episode of Black Mirror in which they compete on that game show. And and so it and what you were describing, Chinlin, reminded me a lot of just Black Mirror in general, but in particularly that episode. Is I know it's not new for 2020, but it's definitely a show that I feel is bingeable in the seasons that are out there. But I remember that episode in particular with when they're on the game show, and this has kind of some hues of that.
Yeah, I never got into Black Mirror. I just could not get past that first episode.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard good things about Black Mirror. But Alice in Borderland, like, it just came out. It's a sci-fi series. I believe it's also only 8 episodes. They're an hour long, very, very intense. But, you, Ryan, as the horror genre lover and expert, you might appreciate it if you don't mind reading subtitles.
I mean, I may. I'm, I often check out the shows that you send my way because you guys are definitely much more on top of television than I am. So I depend upon your show and our conversations in the Twitter sphere to point me to shows because I'm just kind of stubborn, but I'm also a movie theater lover, so I'm not on board the streaming bandwagon either. So I'm just an old-fashioned dinosaur that sometimes has to be led to new content, and I'll so yes, that is me. I am the lion in Jurassic Park, in which Grant and Ian Malcolm have that exchange, about their jobs being extinct. And so that's sometimes how I feel. But so I loved being, led to shows, and I did check out, even though I didn't select it for the show, I did check out Monsterland. And so even though I didn't get into it, I'm glad that you send shows my way for me to check out, and because it's that's what I love about your show is introducing people to new television content out there, or, quote TV, but yeah, introducing them to that content because I certainly count on it. And so I'll because you like it, I certainly should give it a chance, especially if it has some horror adjacency. So sure, I'll check it out sometime.
And even if it's not your cup of tea, like if you just try it out and say, "Hey, I couldn't really get into it," like I mean, it would mean a lot to me if you just tried it. But I'm glad to hear that you listen to us with not just literally listen to our podcast, but like just listen to our recommendations in general. That makes us feel good. But yeah, Alice in Borderland, it was intense. The first half and the second half of the show were it kind of evolves, it kind of builds onto it, so it's not like episodic. And the quote unquote games that they're playing, these life and death games that they're playing, it gets really bad. Tragic. But yeah, so that's my dark sci-fi pick for this year that I enjoyed. My next one is more literally more just family friendly. It's called Duncanville. I watched it on Hulu, but I can't remember if it was actually like on a network earlier this year.
Think it's on Fox.
Fox, that's right. It came out on Fox. I just watch all the episodes on Hulu. It's a family show. It's very 2020. It's very progressive. It's about a family in some suburb, it's called Duncanville. So the main kid, his name is Duncan. He's pretty average. He has dreams about making it big, and he I honestly can't remember what else there is to say about him, but more noteworthy are the voice actors for this animated series. Amy Poehler plays Duncan's mother. Ty Burrell of Modern Family fame, he voices the father, Duncan's father. And then you've got other noteworthy voice actors. I believe Rashida Jones plays one of Duncan's classmates. So it's got a good cast of voice actors, including Phil Lamar, who is of Static Shock and Futurama fame. I love him and all his works. So it's just another family comedy, and I don't think it got a lot of recognition. And plus, it came out in January, so no one's really thinking that far back.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I thought it was a nice watch. Nothing like, I don't have anything super noteworthy to say, but if you want something new to watch in the background, this is another family-friendly animated series.
Cool.
And then last on my list is, I can't believe I like this show.
I can't believe you like the show either.
It's called Emily in Paris. It came out, I believe, last month or earlier this month. I don't know. It's 2020. All the days kind of mushed together. But it's about a Chicago marketing person who gets relocated to Paris. So she has to work with a Paris agency. And, like, their way of doing work is different from her way of doing work. So she's, like, getting used to the culture and she's learning new things about how marketing agencies work in France. And everyone thinks she's just this new young girl who's, you know, too American and blah, blah, blah. But I don't know. It's good eye candy with the guys.
Okay.
I enjoyed it. It was a good, I guess it was more of a guilty pleasure show for me.
Yeah, you should feel guilty. There's so many people in this show speaking English in Paris. It's ridiculous.
Well, the audience is primarily American.
I know why they did it. It's just like, I mean, they do have her stumble over French and not understand a lot of things, but like almost pretty much every main character and everyone she has to interact with has some understanding of English.
Maybe she has a universal translator.
Yeah, see, that would make a lot of sense.
I don't think this is a show for you, Ryan.
Okay.
Isaac doesn't like it.
Okay.
But if anyone else is listening and knows about the show that I'm talking about, Emily in Paris, it's a guilty pleasure watch. You're either in it or you're either for it or against it. I thought I was going to be, I like the idea of Paris because I've always wanted to visit Paris and just France in general. But a few of my coworkers who like really like The Bachelor, and I know I've bashed them a few times on this podcast, but they brought up Emily in Paris 2 that they enjoyed. So I figured
Emily in Paris 2, it's already got a sequel.
There is going to be a sequel, or there is going to be a second season.
Okay.
They greenlit it already because it ended on a cliffhanger. But I mean, they brought it up and I was like, well, I mean, I do like the setting of Paris. I'll give it a try. And I ended up binging on it.
Before we get into some of the shows from other viewers, just an honorable mention for me really quickly. And I won't use it as a tangent, but right before I left to travel home, I watched Netflix's Ratched, which is another Murphy show. And I enjoyed it. I personally, I like the latter four episodes more than the first four episodes. But my favorite thing about it, if for no other reason, listeners, to watch Ratched, one, I guess a couple of reasons. One, if you're familiar with One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, this series is largely inspired by the book, not the Oscar-winning film. One of my favorite appearances in it, and she's in it's three or four episodes, is Sharon Stone. And so Sharon Stone's in the series, and that was enough to get me to watch it. And there are a couple of nods to her famous character of Catherine Tremell from Basic Instinct. So you get it.
I was like, listen, this isn't Basic Instinct, so I'm not interested.
But you do get, when you're introduced to Sharon Stone's character, she's dressed in all white. She has her hair put up, and she sits with her legs crossed. Now, we don't get the actual, you know, famous leg crossing, which in a recent presentation by her receiving an award for, I think it's GQ magazine, she was a woman of the year in 2019, in which she talks about that moment that changed her life forever. Good, bad, and indifferent. So she really, you know, dives deep into the whole leg crossing scene. She does sit with the legs crossed. So I take that as, you know, dressed in all white, you know, sitting with the legs crossed, is a little bit of a nod to Basic Instinct. So that was a bright spot for me right before here at the end of December. So it's just a real quick honorable mention, Ratched on Netflix.
Isaac, would you like to go over your picks?
Sure. Speaking of Netflix, I saw two shows this year that I liked. I'll do the one that I liked less first, which is Blood of Zeus. It is what it is, okay? Blood of Zeus is a good show. It's a animated show with a new telling of a Greek mythology story.
Ooh.
It's another one of clearly by the title, Zeus's bastards doing a thing. And it's, I like it. It's good.
It's by the same animators of Castlevania. Yeah. So if you've watched Castlevania and you're familiar with the gore and the violence animation style, it's you get the same thing in Blood of Zeus.
The premise sounds really interesting. I haven't heard of the show, so this is definitely intrigued me into exploring it a bit more, because I really do enjoy Greek mythology, and so this seems right up my alley. And so
I would have mentioned it if I'd known you liked Greek mythology. I love mythology.
I'm more than just Professor Horror. I do have other interests. That's just so not everything has to be on brand. Although I do love my I do love my horror films. But no, I really enjoy Greek mythology. I'm certainly not an expert in it, you know, by any means, but I'm pretty familiar with many of the Titans and the gods and some of the lore and the backstory of, like, you know, say Medusa, for example, and how she came to be Medusa. And so I really enjoy that.
Give Blood of Zeus a chance. I recommend it.
Okay. Yeah, it's a good show. And so just because it's not the favorite one that I have from Netflix this year, it's definitely not bad. I liked it.
It was going to be on my list, but I just let Isaac have it.
Yeah.
So are they half hour episodes or they?
Yes.
Yeah. They are. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Huh.
And the other one also on Netflix is The Queen's Gambit. If you know just how to play chess, this is an excellent show. Like, that's all the prerequisite knowledge you need. This is about a girl that learns how to play chess at an orphanage in the early 1960s, and then you know, her life after that. It's a drama. I think the episodes are hour-ish.
Yes, they're an hour.
Yeah. It's really good. It's based on a book, and
fun fact,
yeah.
I learned this because I work in search marketing. So after The Queen's Gambit came out, there was a huge, huge spike in chess-related queries on Google.
Aww.
So a lot of people it spiked people's interest in wanting to play chess or buying chess boards and stuff. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's been really popular.
Oh, speaking of chess boards, I have to mention Thanksgiving. I was at my friend Danny's house. Danny's actually my producer on Forza Crowd. And I was enjoying Thanksgiving with her family. And her parents have the chess set from Star Trek, the tri-chess or whatever.
And so the 3D chess.
They have it. And so we got out the chess board, and so we were trying to figure out how to play it. It's really complicated. So we kind of gave up on that endeavor, at least on Thanksgiving. I think we're going to try to revisit it, but no, they have that. And so, so you can still find it on eBay. But it was a real thing, and so yeah, we got that out, and I was like, oh my gosh, it's just like being on the Enterprise, and so we have the chessboard here. So when you talk about chess, I instantly thought of that chessboard, because that is just like I need, now that I know that it exists and her parents have it, I have to learn how to play it so I can. You know, just be fully immersed in the Star Trek verse.
It is a beautiful chessboard. You could just have it on display too.
Anyway, so that show, The Queen's Gambit, on Netflix, about a girl that plays chess and her struggles with addiction. It's very good. I really enjoyed it.
So would you say it's not a stalemate?
That's correct. It's definitely not stale. The other show that I watched this year, Solar Opposites, we did a show on it, right? We did a show on that one.
Yes, okay. We did an episode on it with Josh from Beer with Buffy.
Okay. I really like that one, actually. It's got the same animation style as Rick and Morty, and I think at least one of the same creators.
Mm-hmm.
It's about an alien family that crash landed on Earth, and just their adventures and, you know, dealing with being aliens on Earth. It's really funny. And it's less, it's full of less existential dread than Rick and Morty. So
how similar would you say it, or compare it to a series which, when you described it, instantly came to my head, which is Third Rock from the Sun? So how would you say they compare in terms of, because they both seem to have similar premises, you know, aliens, you know, coming to Earth. So how would you compare solar opposites?
Quite similar.
Okay.
The only thing that I would say is a little different is that these aliens aren't.
They don't look
they're,
human.
They're not in disguise.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they definitely look alien.
Okay.
And the leader is a lot grumpier than
John Lithgow.
Yeah.
Oh, Third Rock, man. I liked that one. I remember binging on season one a few years ago. I don't know if it's still on Netflix, though.
I think I have it if it's not. But yeah, it's around.
Okay.
So, yeah. That's a good reference, Ryan.
Yeah.
Didn't even think about that.
Yeah, because they are, you know, fairly similar. It's, you know, the three other people with the leader are, you know, kind of doing their own thing, and he's always kind of getting pissed off at him. So, yeah, it's very similar.
And then you guys already discussed
Star Trek Picard. And then I also watched, there was this new show on Hulu called Crossing Swords by the creators of Robot Chicken. It was
okay.
It was funny in the first episode. I feel like the trailer made the show seem a lot funnier than it was. Like they packed all the jokes into the trailer, and then the rest of the show, like, I don't know, it felt like it was trying to be serious and more often than it was trying to be funny. Like, they were actually going for consistency in things, and I feel like that sort of detracted from the show. And normally, you know, I'm a big fan of consistency, but in a comedy, you know, like, say, Family Guy or The Simpsons, or, you know, you don't necessarily need consistency. Like, you need setups for jokes. You don't need to be like, oh, yeah, that person died like three episodes ago. It's like, nah, that doesn't matter. It's fine.
They're always killing off Kenny.
Well, not so much these days, but yeah, they used to kill him all the time. And then I started Raised by Wolves, which is...
it's on HBO.
It's this HBO drama where the Earth has sent out colony ships because it's been destroyed by something. I don't think they ever say exactly what, but essentially there's two factions. There's the atheists and the religious people. And the atheists are worried that they're going to get wiped out, so they send their ship earlier, but only with embryos, whereas the religious people feel like that's anathema to God or something, so that they have to fly slower to get to this new planet. And the atheists send a couple of androids to protect their children and, you know, have them grow up, but that whole thing goes to complete shit by the time the religious people show up. And then sort of some really crazy stuff happens. I've only seen the first episode. And I felt it had potential, but I'm not sure I'm going to like where it goes. So that's why I didn't finish it. I'll probably finish it later. But
you're not like so hooked that you want to keep watching right now.
Right. And the same thing with the Animaniacs reboot on Hulu. Like, I saw that. I saw maybe the first four or five episodes.
Oh, that came out? I didn't even know that you could stream it yet. I knew
it's only on Hulu, so you can only stream it.
I didn't know there was a reboot this year.
The problem with that show is that, you know, in the original series, the Warner Brothers and sister are sort of the glue that are holding the show together. And there's a lot of little shorts. In the new version, it's like half the episode is a 15-minute cartoon with the Warner Brothers and sister, and the other half is Pinky and the Brain.
Oh.
And they're okay, but there's not like a lot of like tiny stuff like good idea, bad idea, which is, you know, normally a 20-second thing, like good idea, stopping to smell the roses, bad idea, stopping to feel the roses, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like it could have been better. The trailer, again, makes it seem like it's going to be awesome and hilarious. But a lot of that stuff was kind of, you know, spent on the first episode. And then after that, it's mildly funny. But I hear that it gets better towards the end of the season. But I didn't make it that far.
Would you say this is maybe a case of, you know, because of just maybe taking nostalgia crack a little too far, where it's just like, yeah, you know, we're like reliving the 90s here in 2020. And so, but just some things are, you know, just in retro.
Some things don't translate well to the future.
They don't translate well.
And for the most part, that is sort of the problem with Animaniacs, is that it was really sort of pop culture referency for 1990, but like everyone learned from them, and so what they're doing doesn't seem new because everyone was copying them, and now they're just trying to copy other people copying them, and so it's, you know, it's a little meta and it's a little, like, you're not adding a whole lot to the conversation.
Now, answer me this, though. Do we revisit the Countries of the World song, but now we have, like, probably 20 different countries that weren't there in 1990 when the song was originally written, and so do we have Wacko or Yakko,
cool,
like, going through the countries now?
I mean, that would be cool. They do have songs. I don't think they're looking to rewrite any of the songs that they already have, though.
Because I think half those countries don't exist anymore. Okay, I'm exaggerating, but some of the countries definitely don't exist anymore.
Yeah, for sure.
In that song.
For sure, and you know, especially when you look at like Africa and stuff.
Yeah.
They like Sudan is now South Sudan and Sudan, and you know, there's a lot of changes that have happened over the last, you know, 30-ish years.
I know, right? I can't believe it's like 30 years ago it was 1990. It's just crazy.
It hurts me.
Me too. So I think you and I, Isaac, and I'm not going to disclose this on air, but I think you and I are the same age, because I think I've had this conversation with Chen Lin before. So I think you and I are on the same wavelength.
That sounds about right.
Oh, all right. Well, we are going to wrap up with a few mentions from some of our Twitter peeps or tweeps. And I have a few shows from two friends who I thought I would bring up. So Andy from Geek Salad Podcast, his new shows for 2020, he chose The Queen's Gambit, which, as we mentioned, is super popular, so no surprise there. The Goes Wrong Show, which I guess technically came out last year, but is new for U.S. viewers this year. I've actually never heard of this, but listeners, if you have, it's, you know, still counts as a new show. And then Mrs. America on Hulu, which is actually still on my queue. It's about the women's rights movement. So Cate Blanchett stars in it, and I love Cate Blanchett. I can't remember which person she plays in the show, but I've heard great things about Mrs. America. And then The Nerd Crusade, they said Lovecraft Country, which is on HBO. It's I've heard good things too. I just haven't watched it yet, so it's on my queue. There's so much stuff on my queue, guys. And then, of course, The Queen's Gambit. Geek Peak Podcast. They said Animaniacs reboot. The Stand, which I guess just came out because there's only been like two episodes so far of The Stand. A show called Dave, which I actually haven't heard of. And then Raised by Wolves. So I guess they really enjoyed the show, since Isaac, you've only seen the pilot. And then two of my friends, Marissa, said she liked this show called It's Okay to Not Be Okay. It's on Netflix. I can't remember what it's about, but judging on the title, it sounds like it's got themes of mental health and self-care. And then Ray, who is actually our patron. Hey, Ray. Thank you for your support. Ray said he was getting into The Stand, which just came out. So thank you, everyone, for sharing your picks for new shows of 2020 that you enjoyed. And I just want to end really quick by saying Bridgerton on Netflix came out this weekend. We're recording on a Sunday, so this just came out. It's set in Victorian England time period, and it's like a cross between Pride and Prejudice and Gossip Girl.
Ooh, that sounds right up your alley.
Yeah,
that's totally got Chinland written all over it.
So, I started it last night, and I'm already halfway through because it's only 8 episodes, but they are about an hour long, so there's also that. So they really pack a lot in every episode. But yeah, so that this concludes our final episode of 2020. This has been a fabulous conversation with you, Ryan. We thank you again for coming back to the Bingeables podcast, and we want to say from all of us to you guys, Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Ryan, feel free to plug, give out the plugs.
Sure. You guys can follow me on Twitter at RLTerry1. You can also follow my show, Forza Crowd, at Forza Crowd Pod. So if you're a lover of sitcoms, then the show is something that you may very well be interested in. So I'll leave it there. But yeah, so I love to interact with you. So, give us a follow. Yeah, give me a follow. And if you're into a TV show, since I fully admit to not being on top of shows all the time, depending upon wonderful people like Chinlin and Isaac of the Bingeables to point me in the direction of new shows, feel free to send me a show so I can enjoy the TV conversations and not just watch Star Trek, TNG, and Voyager on repeat all the time in my house, which there's nothing wrong with that, by the way. But it would be
nothing
nice to add some other shows to it. But very much wishing everybody a happy new year, and thank you so much for the opportunities to be on the show one time at the end. It was like once or twice at the end of last year, then the other times this year. And so it's been a blast, and always thank you for thinking of me and for the interaction online. And so just you're going into 21, which in a casino, 21 is lucky. So maybe 2021 will be lucky for everybody this year, because we can't get much worse. Although you can, so let's not say it can't get any worse, because we all know what happens after you say it can't get any worse. So so let's just head for have some good luck in 21. And until next time, binging listeners out there, so I look forward to coming back on in the future, and just keep up the great work, you guys.
Until next time.
Thanks for listening to the Bingeables podcast.
Leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you enjoy listening to our podcast, please consider giving us your support on Patreon for as little as $1 a month. Just visit us on patreon.com/bingeablespod. That's patreon.com/BINGEABLESPOD. POD.
You can connect with us on Twitter at BingeablesPod, or you can email us at BingeablesPod@gmail.com.
Until next time.
The Bingeables Podcast is produced by patron Raymond G.
And the music you're listening to is Shaving